Welcome to the Courtney Turner Podcast. My guest today is Dr. Ahmed Malik. I just asked him how to pronounce his name because I would have butchered it. So glad we got that cleared up. And just a reminder, if you like the work we're doing here and you want to see the Courtney Turner Podcast continue, then you can support the work that I'm doing. You can support me directly through a Give, Send, Go. You can buy me a coffee. You can give me a Venmo. You can also do a snail mail to my P.O. Box, and that is P.O. Box 680093, Franklin, Tennessee, 37068. We also have, for 1 week only, Relax the Sauna is giving $150 off your sauna. So it is still winter. We had a bad storm here, so I don't know what it's like where you are in the world, but use your promo code CORTZ, C-O-U-R-T-Z, to get all of your discounts. And since we have a limited time today, I am going to bring my guests on, but you can go to the website, CourtneyTurner.com, or click the links below. You can also subscribe, like, share, and send me feedback. All of that helps as well. Dr. Ahmed, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Even better after watching your intro. I love the 80s feel of that. Do 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 do. It's just I'm a kid of the 80s.
So yeah,
I love that. I don't know who made it, but all that neon and all that synth music, spot on, man.
Seriously. We've got the mystery man behind the scene and did really good work there. And it's actually called Lady of the 80s, so you're spot on with the 80s theme there.
yep. Definitely. Yeah, so yeah.
You're an orthopedic surgeon who was canceled in 2020, right? So tell me a little bit about, not in 2020, in 2021.
So I was an orthopedic surgeon. I need to get used to saying this. But basically, no, I got suspended from two of the main hospitals I was working from last year. And So it got to a point where I couldn't actually practice anymore in December.
Wait.
And I had to let it all go. I gave up my license voluntarily because at that point, I'm not earning any money. No hospital is allowing me to work there. And, the licensing system is now used as a way to punish dissident doctors. So, you get trolled through the suspensions, investigations, and all that nonsense. So I thought, well, if I can't practice, what's the point of holding on to my license? So, yeah, sure. My 25-year surgical career came to an end last year.
And why last year?
Well, basically, in December 2022, I went very public about criticizing the mRNA jabs and the harms that I was seeing. Right. And immediately, two of the private hospitals, right from the top management level, contacted me and said, stop doing this. You've, breached our social media policy. If you keep doing this, we're going to have to, consider your practicing privileges. And I turned around and said, no, my duty of care as a doctor is to speak up for medical ethics and patient safety. And what I find bizarre is, why are you not asking me what it is I'm seeing? Why are you not asking me, hey, what are you talking about? Yeah, maybe we should look into this. Surely it's better that you look into something and tell me I'm wrong, right, rather than tell me to shut up and I'm right. I'm just one of many. I mean, there's Dr. Charles Hoff in the States, William Mackis, Roger Hodgkinson, that's Canada. Here in the UK, you got your Sarah Myhill, your David Cartland, your Sam White, Jane Donahan in Ireland. You've got Jerry Waters, Anne McCloskey. I mean, there's doctors all around the world who have spoken out and are getting hammered for doing so. So, yeah, that's my story.
Yeah. Wow. It is really interesting. I lost my job back in 2020. So yeah. And then that was way before the vaccines. It was really just because I didn't agree with the, their stances. This was with the mask, but I actually think I was fired before that for just not being supportive of, all the virtue signaling with the BLM riots. So it was pretty early that I was experiencing that. But it is interesting, the kind of ripple effect around the world. And I don't know, this is a it's interesting. On the one hand, I'm really glad that people are uniting on this front to stand up for freedom around the world. But on the other hand, it also does look like kind of a, you know, there's a, because their agenda is to dissolve the borders, to create kind of this, you know, one world, centralized governing body. And so now they do have this, through the opposition, you know, in typical Hegelian dialectic fashion, they have created kind of unity, which is, it's very ironic and it's interesting. But do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things there. I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, the one world government thing is 100% correct. Yeah. I mean, the problem is we don't really know who the enemy is. We always talk about they, we talk about the elitists, mm-hmm. we talk about the rulers, we talk about the predator class, the philanthropists, yeah. the criminal class, the technocrats.
The I call them the parasite class, but yes.
I love that. I call them the parasite class because they are. They're like massive parasite, yeah. sucking the life force of humanity.
They want to create a feudal system, a neo-feudal system. And in a feudal system, you have serfs. So the serfs are really what feed the ruling class. They really can't function without us. I mean, you know, in our country and arguably lots of the world because of the petrodollar, you know, we have a fiat currency. And that whole system only works because of the lie that we all buy into. But they need us to buy into that lie in order for them to accrue their wealth and their control and power. I mean, that's just one example. I mean, the medical system is a whole nother example.
100%. So the problem is you've got this enemy that's hidden in the shadows. And we get these little puppets like Klaus Schwab. And, you know, are they really the enemy? Are they the people, the evil bastards out there? We don't know, right? I don't think so. They're just the puppets. They're the front. But the problem is, we are so divided in the freedom movement and we're the minority. You know, we're 5%, 10%, maybe 15% max who are critically thinking and not in a zombie-like state. Right. But the enemy knows that actually to win, not only do they have their leaders, but they provide the opposition leaders as well. Right. And, you know, and that's why I think there's a lot of fragmentation. We don't know who's controlled. We don't know who's limited hangout. We don't know who's compromised. And I think there is definitely, it's a fact, you know, this intellectual dark web that I think Whitney Webb talks about and other people where, you know, they have the mainstream media, which they're kind of losing on. And then there's the alternative media, but I now call it the mainstream alternative media.
The man, yep.
Now, you're not in it. I'm not in it.
Nope.
Okay, we're not in that club. We're like the little fish just saying the truth. So, you know, we have to keep fighting, though. We have to keep speaking out. I see on your bookshelf, you've got the Ed Griffin book, The Creature from Pepper Island.
He was my 300th episode. Yeah, I think I'm going to do another one with him in a few months. But
Yeah, I mean, then he must have told you, because on my podcast, he told me that I've got the warrior gene, the 1% warrior gene. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, you just need the 1% warrior gene to be supported by 15% of people, and you can overturn all these evil people. You don't need to convince everybody. You just need to get that. Like, if you think about the American War of Independence, how did you get the War of Independence? You had literally just a few percentage point people fighting against the monarchy. Most people were in the middle and a lot were pro-royalists.
Yeah.
Now look, 200 years later, I dare you to find anyone who is an American who wants to join with the UK. I'm telling you right now, you won't find anyone. So, you know, you can change. You can change. It just needs a very determined, driven few. And, you know, we're in that camp.
So it's interesting when you say, G. Edward Griffin said, the warrior gene. So I have this theory that...
Crusader gene.
Okay. I have this theory that it actually is a literal gene because there's a risk-taking gene. No, it's the risk-taking gene is the RDR, it's the RDR4 with the seventh, the RDR4 with the seventh allele. And or is it the DRD4? I have to look that up. I might have gotten it backwards, but it's they usually talk about it in terms of financial risk-taking. But my theory is that, you know, that usually carries over into other types of risk-taking. And it's a recessive gene. And if you think about the founding fathers who developed the United States, they took tremendous risks. I mean, they risked their lives. They risked their children's lives. And they said they did it because they felt freedom was more important for posterity. And so my theory is that the United States, the people here, or and not just here, but the people who do take these, you know, very bold types of risks are people who possess this risk-taking gene. And oh, it is okay, the DRG4 with the seventh allele. So my theory. It's actually literally a genetic trait, and I think they're trying to breed it out of us with the, you know, that this whole Prussian model of education was designed to breed compliance. They literally said they wanted to breed, you know, mindless
workers and soldiers.
Yeah, exactly.
Workers and soldiers. Yeah, 100%. Look, I totally get the whole gene thing. I like your little theory. But, you know, centralized doctors think that, you know, when a patient comes to see you, you know, oh, you're sick because your genes are faulty, your genes are bad. You know, big pharma wants to tell you you've got a genetic problem. Look, I'm along Jack Cruz's line of thinking. I'm a decentralized doctor. And I think, you know, we're a product of our environment and our lifestyles and the toxins and everything. We're shaped, you know, we are not. We're not codified. You know, our genes are expressed by how we live and how we've been, you know, the environment that we're in. So I think I don't want to make it. Yeah. The thing. Yeah, exactly. I don't want people to think, oh, well, I don't have a warrior gene in me, so there's nothing I can do about it. My message to everybody is you can have a warrior gene. You can have a crusader gene. And you know what? Just man up, woman up, grow a spine, speak up, be brave, and do the right thing, because we need more people to do that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right. What is the saying that genetics load the gun, but epigenetics pull the trigger? So the epigenetics, the lifestyle.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. No, that is exactly the way it is. And we need this. We need people to take responsibility for themselves and stop trusting blindly in authority and the government. You need to understand the government's not your friend, it's not your pal. You know, your founding fathers, you know, kind of knew what they're talking about. And not all the founding fathers were great. I mean, it was a bunch of guys who were all slave owners and landowners, and they wanted to protect themselves and their wealth. But that's why you got the Bill of Rights. And you had a few individuals in there like Thomas Jefferson and Andrew Jackson who really got it, who fought against the central banks and everything. But, you know, you got that constitution, which was at least some bulwark, some protection between the government and that individual and that person. Unfortunately, not many other countries kind of have that. And I think that's why America is under so much attack, because you're like one of the last obstacles in the way. They need to destroy America.
I think that's so true. I think that's so true. Do you feel that where you are, that a lot of people share that sentiment? I just noticed, you know, since 2020, I mean, I would make the joke, you know, I was searching for the train station. I was very late to find it. And then I found the high speed rail and I'm scrambling to try and catch up. So, you know, my awakening journey. Yeah, I've been kind of behind the ball on it. I'm a little bit delayed, but what I noticed, especially in 2020, when I was starting to wake up, was so many people reaching out all over the world. And I thought it was kind of bizarre. I was like, why are people following our election? Why are people so invested all over the world in what's going on in the United States of America? And so I would ask them, and that was, you know, most of them, that's what they said to me, was that they felt like it was the last bastion of hope, the last bastion of freedom. And they're really looking to us to defend the freedoms, you know, to protect them, you know, to give them some hope. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I always say I'm very late to the party, but better late than never. So that's kind of similar to your little thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's important because, you know, some people have been like critical of me and like, who are you and where have you come from and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, I've given enough podcasts and interviews. You can look it up and research yourself. But, you know, I think that's important because just because people wake up later doesn't mean that we should discount them or not treat their voice as important. Because if we hold on to like, well, we knew everything then, we're never going to grow. We're never going to become the majority. Right. So we need to let people, we need to allow people come late to the party, as far as I'm concerned. Now, the next thing is, well, look, I think people have different reasons why they watch what's going on in America. You have to remember, America is an empire, right? It's as simple as that. And then this empire is very sophisticated. It's the biggest empire that humanity has ever seen. And it has hard power with all its, you know, aircraft carriers and missiles and gunboats and God knows what else. But it's also got soft power, and that soft power is cultural, music, movies. You know, I was talking about, you know, the 80s. You know, I grew up in Glasgow, a working class, blue collar town in Scotland, you know, known for its shipyards. And here in Scotland, across the pond, in the 80s, I was watching things like, you know, A-Team, you know, Chips, you know, you know, all these different, you know, watching Transformers. You know, my whole formative years were brought up watching American TV and E.T. and God knows what else. So, you know, American culture is very interwoven with, for example, British culture. You know, we often here in the UK, we say, you know, if America, you know, sneezes, you know, we'll catch it. You know, it's, you know, we're next down the line. So our culture is very interwoven. You know, even myself, I've got family all over the States. I've visited God knows how many times. You know, I love America. You know, I love the people. I think the American people are some of the goddamn most amazing people in the world. You just happen to have the worst rulers and politicians. It's quite funny, like, how such wonderful people who are kind, caring, generous, you know, are ruled by a bunch of absolute criminals, the cabal. It's kind of insane. So I think that's an issue. So, but everybody's going to be interested in what's happening in America. You know, you're the world's only superpower. Everybody's watching very closely. And a lot of things that, unfortunately, bad that happen are actually coming from America. You know, one of the things I've realized as I've gotten older is that we in the West are not the good guys. You know, I grew up thinking, you know, these pesky people around the world were all the bad guys, including people, you know, I used to be a Muslim. I used to be like, oh my God, why is it all the Muslims are bad? Hey, why are all these people always the bad guys? Well, now, kind of after 9/11, and, you know, a lot of people don't talk about that. After 9/11, I realized that these evil people who happen to sit in positions of power in America actually don't care about America either. And they're happy to and willing to sacrifice their own to further their own agendas. These people are not patriots. These people are not people who love sovereign nations, love America, love the UK. These are people who are globalists. They're parasites. They have their own agendas, and they will sacrifice anyone who's in their way or that will further their goals. So one of the things that I realized is a lot of what American policies are not really good. And a lot of Americans and British people are duped into thinking that we're going on righteous wars and doing the right thing. And actually, we're the cause of a lot of the problems around the world. And we put in place dictators. We overturn democratically elected leaders. We fund bad people so that we can rape their resources and the leaders can turn and look the other way. We just cause a lot of trouble. But what's changed is this parasite. Maybe it always has done and I just wasn't aware of it. But this parasite has now turned its eye towards the West and is now feeding off its people. You know, like, for example, this COVID jab and everything else we're seeing, promotion of these transgender issues. I mean, it's quite sinister. It really is. So, yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think that that's a very succinct explanation of exactly what's going on. What are your thoughts on what is going on? You brought up the COVID jab, the transgender issues, and the transgender issues are not just a cultural, ideological. You know, they're actually medicalizing it, right? They're, you know, doing puberty blockers and all sorts of surgeries. So, what are your thoughts on how they're using the medical industry to advance this agenda, and where people are with it, and where we're going, what's going to happen.
Right. The whole transgender thing is an absolute nightmare, Courtney. So basically it's just evil. It's demonic. It's satanic. It's evil. It's anti-family. It's anti-God. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's only two sexes, male and female. It's as simple as that. You're not born into the wrong body. You're not born with the wrong genes. You're not born faulty. Okay. It's just BS. You know, we're made in God's image, right? It's as simple as that. So if you're saying that you're faulty and wrong, what are you trying to say? It's the most ungodly thing ever. So this whole idea that you're born in the wrong body and that we can suddenly change you, it's just ridiculous, right? And the thing is, again, let's go back to the 80s. You know, if anybody said that in the 80s, you did either laugh at you or put you in a loony bin, you know, lock you up in a psych unit. I mean, is that crazy and ridiculous? But here we are in 2024. And one thing I realize as the time goes by, we're definitely not getting more advanced. We're regressing big time. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is peak insanity, not peak humanity. So now this idea is being pushed. I mean, there's a lot of Tavistock, the Insulin Center in America. I can't remember. I can't pronounce it properly, but all these places. Why? I mean, if you look at the Communist Manifesto, I mean, they always promote destruction of the family unit. What better way to do this? And they want constant fights and wars and battles between groups. So forget about male, female, and toxic masculinity and femininity. Now you've got this non-gender, non-binary. Guess what? These people, you know, will also not be able to have sex once they've had surgery, once they've been mutilated. So their reproduction capacity disappears. They will never have any sexual pleasure. They are also then medical patients for life, pretty much.
Yep.
A lot of these people have mental health problems, and their mental health problems are exacerbated by all of these issues. So contrary to what people are told, oh, you know, if you don't transition, your child is a higher risk of suicide. Bullshit. No. If they transition and get to their 20s and realize that they've been mutilated and can't have sex and can't have normal functions and they're a Frankenstein monster, yeah, no, their mental health issues go much higher and they're more likely to kill themselves. So these patients are patients for life and they're dependent on the state.
Yeah.
Remember, they're dependent. These are vulnerable people who are abused, mutilated, exploited. Big pharma benefits. They give their puberty blockers and their drugs. It's money, money, money. And all these things that we see in the world today are multifactorial. There's multiple agents involved. There's multiple benefits involved. So take, for example, 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just one thing. You got the Patriot Act. You got the Forever Wars. You got the theft of resources overseas. You got geopolitical aims and goals. You had massive shorting and profiting on the stock exchange and money being made. You know, there's lots of gains. It's never just one thing. Same with COVID. You know, there's multiple angles of attack and there's multiple avenues of benefit being, you know, dished out. But the common themes are some people are making power. Making money and consolidating power. And a lot of other people are losing money and losing power and sovereignty. I mean, that's a common theme.
Sure.
So this whole transgender issue just fits into the whole bigger global agenda of destroying the family unit, destroying what it means to have a mum and a dad and children, reproduction, self-love, and confidence in who you are. I mean, these people, you know, cannot be happy. You know, I'm sorry. If you think you're in the wrong body, you're a deeply unhappy individual, right?
Of course. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And what I find disgusting is the fact that the medical profession partakes in this and doesn't speak up against it. So no one is challenging and saying, this is wrong. This is not informed consent. This is experimentation. And one of the things I'm really disgusted about my profession is, you know, we've just lost the plot. I was telling my colleague earlier on today, he's still a surgeon working. I was like the problem is that most doctors I know today don't give a shit about treating patients and going into medicine to help people. All they care about is their money and their salary and their prestige. That's it. So this whole idea of first do no harm to the patient, I call BS, right? It's first do no harm to your salary, first do no harm to your mortgage, first do no harm to your career, first do no harm to your reputation, first do no harm to your standing, first do no harm to your license, first do no harm to any of that. And then, only then do you consider the patient. Only as long as you're following the protocols and guidelines. So this idea of first do no harm, absolute BS. And I would say to you and your listeners, do you know what? Next time you go and see a doctor or your child is in front of a doctor or your parents or your loved ones, and your doctor says, oh, you know what? I think you should take this drug or you should have this operation. How do you know they're doing what's in your or your loved one's interests and not, in fact, doing what's in their interest to protect their license, their mortgage, their salary, their reputation, stop them being investigated and suspended and all the other things I've just listed. I'm telling you right now, you can't. You can't. Now, if that doesn't worry people and make them think, holy macaroni, how have we got here? I don't know what will make you worried. because medical ethics came about over centuries, you know, of hard work, distillation of ideas and what's right and what's wrong, really to protect you, the public, from us, the doctors, because we've got a bad habit of doing some crazy shit. Not so long ago, we were taking bits of people's brains out. The guy who invented that operation got a Nobel Prize for it. Just think about that. I'm going to take out a chunk of your brain. Well done. Let's give you a Nobel Prize for that. I mean, how ludicrous. Or how about do some trepanning? We're going to stick a needle up your nose and scramble your brains a little bit. Or how about we give you some arsenic or mercury or cocaine? We did all this crazy shit and more. And we still do. Let's give you some gene editing technology and put it inside your body and make you a GMO human. And yeah, it's great. You know, this is the kind of stuff we do. And where are the doctors? Where are the doctors saying, no, no, this is wrong? So, yeah, I'm an ex-surgeon. And while I'm sad about not being able to operate anymore, and I think, you know, it's a loss for people and humanity, because I'm one of those rare ethical doctors who really gives a damn about his patients. I don't think I want to be in that profession anymore, because they're so lost, you know? They're lost.
Yeah. So you were an orthopedic surgeon, correct? So this is just one of the few areas of medicine that I feel like is actually, you know, really important still, because they're still like, you know, that's acute medicine in most cases. You know, in most cases, it's somebody who breaks a bone and it's misaligned and, you know, you help realign it and reset it. And, you know, in some cases, you know, external pieces are needed. And this is like some of the most incredible aspects of advanced medicine, right? Or the technology of medicine that really does help humans to be able to function, regain functionality, you know, be able to have extended mobility. There's a lot of other facets of, you know, modern medicine that I think are really hindering people in the long run. You know, they're prescribing medicines that they don't tell you have side effects, because all medicines do. That's not to say that in some cases, you know, you weigh out the risks and the benefits. And sometimes you decide, okay, I might have some risk, but, you know, I want to take this because it's helping me overall. And unfortunately, you know, that whole informed consent is typically not given. I mean, people are taking black box label warning drugs all the time, with no clue that there's even a black box label warning or that those even exist. And they take it regularly, thinking they're perfectly fine. So my question is really in regards to the, because I do think the whole, you know, the root of the word doctor actually means to teach. And, you know, it's become kind of the opposite. It's become the gatekeeper of esoteric knowledge in many aspects, in many regards. And so it's hindering and precluding people from learning about their bodies, learning how to help themselves, heal themselves, give themselves the tools.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But listen, we've always been like this. We've always been like this. So look, what I would say is 100% what you're saying. Like, I don't want to throw the baby out the bathwater, but the problem is the bathwater isn't the bathwater, it's the baby in the swimming pool. Most of it is absolute garbage, right? Emergency healthcare, trauma when you need to, absolutely, we should hold on to that. But 95% of the diseases out there are lifestyle, environment, and toxins. You know, you should get rid of that and everything's sorted. We don't focus on that. Now, even as an orthopedic surgeon, I can tell you, every year that went by, I realized I needed to operate less. So I was operating on 5% of my patients. I can diagnose and I can manage things non-operatively. And actually, if I improve someone's general fitness and health and their sleep and their stress, I could get rid of their pain or minimize their pain. So this idea that, you know, even as an orthopedic surgeon, you know, my treatment, I would have to operate on everyone. No, 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 no. And I used to always say to my patients, I'm a really ethical surgeon, a really crappy businessman. Because if I was a really good businessman, I would operate on every single patient. But I don't want to operate on you. I want to operate less on you. My colleagues were 50% conversion rates.
Yeah.
And I would look at them, you know, with real disappointment. And I knew what was driving it. Because of their mortgages, because of their mistresses, because of the expensive holidays, because of the private schooling. And, they, you know, why would they want to persuade someone not to have an operation and take longer time explaining how they can learn and themselves and heal themselves, when they can just offer an operation and make the big bucks? So the system is deeply corrupt and there's a problem there. But, you know, I mean, even what you're saying about the doctors holding on to knowledge, this goes way back. Nicholas Culpepper, 1600s, look him up, English doctor. He wanted to translate everything from Latin into common English. And I mean, they went for him. I think they killed him. He died at a very young age. He was perfectly fit and healthy and suddenly he's gone. He's dead. And that's because he was publishing the medical texts in English and saying to people, look, forget, bypass the doctors, expensive physicians, heal yourself. Here's the herbal medicines. Here are the herbal remedies. You guys can all heal yourselves. But the medical system has always been like, we will possess the knowledge, the same as the lawyers and any other profession. We're going to hold on to the knowledge and we're going to make sure that we know everything and you have to come to us and we charge you a lot of money so that you can get our services. And knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I'm doing my podcast. If I can go do a quick plug in, you know, docmalik.com. My whole point of a podcast when I started it was a hobby. This was my little way of fighting back, which was to inform everyone, educate everyone, and empower everyone to make the right choices for themselves, for their health. And so, because, look, being the healthiest version of yourself is the ultimate expression of freedom. And people need to get that.
And you can blame,
absolutely. And you can blame big bad government. You can blame whoever you like. But you know what? At the end of the day, you need to take responsibility through the simple life choices that you make. You know, think about what passes through your lips, what it is you're drinking, what it is you're eating. Think about the light. Think about everything. This is why I talk about everything on my podcast. You know, it's all related. Everything is related. Everything.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's really true. What would be, if you could advise people, I think people are feeling very lost in terms of health because there's so much information now and there's a lot of disinformation as well, right? There's a lot of grifters there. So I think people recognize that the mainstream system is broken. So the alternative system has kind of exploded and, you know, they've in some cases, they've given a little credence to that term quack, which I don't like because that was used to demonize people who were actually doing good work previously. Mm-hmm. But now it has become really hard to, weed through and a lot of discernment. So how do you advise people?
Yeah, let me summarize very quickly. So I actually think mainstream allopathic centralized doctors are the ultimate quacks. Just put it out there right now. Okay, they're the ultimate quacks. I mean, I've written a letter to doctors who pushed the vaccines on my Substack. I've got 101 questions. And I'm telling you right now, when you read those 101 questions, you realize any doctor pushing vaccines is a quack. Right. So look, I agree with there's a lot of misinformation. Number one, you don't supplement your way through health.
Some of it's innocent, by the way. I just want to preface that. Some of it's innocent misinformation. Some of it's not. But yeah.
I know. Yeah. So number one, you don't supplement yourself into good health. Number two, don't look for expensive solutions. I'm going to get the latest red light bed and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I'm going to get a personal trainer and I'm going to do this and an expensive gym membership. No, look. It's actually really simple. Keep it simple, stupid, is all I would say. Right. So my top tips very quickly, because I know you got another guest coming on, sleep. Just get that bedrock sorted out. Go to sleep early, wake up early every freaking day. 10 to 6. Your sleep cycle, your circadian cycle, this is when you heal. It's not downtime, wasted time. It's regeneration. It's healing. It's growing. Very important. Get that sorted out. Don't make any goddamn excuses. Ditch the TV in the evening, the flickering blue light. Dim all the lights, get some blue blocker glasses on, get off your phone, get off the TV, get off the laptop, whatever it is, wind down. And in the morning at 6, watch the sunrise. Look into the sun, into the sky. I mean, not directly into sun, but, you know, get that sunlight into your body, into your eyes, and not behind a window. It blocks the light. So get your circadian rhythm right. And I could talk to you about hours about that and the hormones, and the regulation, the mitochondria. I mean, just trust me, get your sleep in order. Next is basically your food, your diet. You know, what are you eating? Convenience food is not convenient for your health. So ditch that. Don't have anything that comes out of a packet or a jar, bottle, sauce, you know, on the middle aisles of the supermarket. Eat whole foods. Personally, I'm very heavy carnivore. You know, I get all my meat from a local regenerative farmer. Just go straight to the farmer. And, you know, I'm not having ribeyes every day. I can't afford that. I'm an out-of-job surgeon. But you can get ground mincemeat. You can make patties. You can make lasagnas. You can make whatever, spaghetti bolognese. I mean, just minced toasties. Just have lots of meat, eggs. Have whole foods. Have vegetables, preferably ones that you grow or are in season. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, and avoid ultra-processed food. Avoid seed oils. Avoid sugar. Okay, refined sugar, all that stuff. Just cut it all out. The next one is your eating window. This is the third biggest bang for your buck. I'm telling you right now, cut back your eating window. Are you a sheep, bah, grazing all day? Or are you a lion? Now, those lions eat once or maybe once in 2 days. Okay, once a day or maybe once in 2 days. And then the rest of the time, just think about it. Are they in the gym lifting weights? No, they're sleeping under a tree and they're jacked, right? So listen, just have one or two meals a day. If you really, really want to start off, just skip breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Start at 12 o'clock.
I will just say, as somebody who was a trainer and a coach, and I've seen that does not work so well for a lot of women. It really messes their hormones. I've seen it over and over and over again.
Yeah, my wife would disagree. My wife would disagree. She's 38. Maybe. She's been doing she's doing it for 5 years. She's absolutely in the best shape and form. She runs 15K.
I mean, everyone's different, but I will tell you. I'm telling, and I know it's anecdotal, but I'm telling you, I've seen so many women like just royally screw their hormones.
This is because they're not doing the fasting with everything else. They're not doing it with the sleep. They're not doing it with what they're eating. They're not doing it with what they're drinking. They're not doing it with their stress. So this is why everything is. So this is why if you just do one thing, you're 100% right. So, you know, and so I know I've heard, I had so many patients who'd be like, oh, I'm doing my fasting, but you know, it's not working. And then you start picking through what they're actually eating.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And they're eating garbage. They're eating mainly vegan or vegetarian or processed stuff, carbohydrates. And they're sleeping late at night and blah, 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 blah. So this is why I said the sleep, the stress is also very important. The food, the fasting, the eating window. Look, you do not want to be grazing all day. And if you think about it, what qualifies as an intermittent fasting is 16 hours of fasting. That means you've got 8 hours to eat. So just think about that. That's like 10 in the morning to 6 p.m. I mean, seriously, you can't do that. You can't just limit your eating to 10 to 6 p.m. I mean, why do we? Gluttony has become normalized.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about our ancestors. You think you came out of a cave and we're like, right, let's have a big hearty breakfast. All right, I need to stop. I can't chase the woolly mammoth. I need to have a little break now, coffee break, and then blah, blah, blah. But no, you had to go out and get your food. You had to forage. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the day, you'd have a big feast. So evolutionary, that's how we're designed. And it's all about insulin resistance and blah, blah. I'm not going to get into it. So just please trust me, do the intermittent fasting. You don't need to do one meal a day. I do that personally and my wife does it. But at least limit it to 16 hours. And then stress. Stress is a killer. Not just is it in your mind. It's physical. It will destroy you physically. It ruins your immune system. It predisposes you to infection and cancer. So try and work on your stress. You know, if something's stressing you out, think about why. You've got it. Okay. Try and mitigate it, cancel it, get rid of it. Secondly, sleeping properly and exercise will help with the stress. And then the last one I would say is love, community. You know, love your neighbor, love your partner, love your children, love humanity, get out in nature, love nature. I mean, that is healing. Healing for your soul, being outdoors, being in sunlight, being in nature, being with people you love, you know, the exact opposite to lockdowns, basically.
Yeah, for sure.
Whatever they were saying, do the opposite.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, this is just basic. This is just basic. Like, I'm not doing the difficult, complicated scientific. I'm just saying it's cheap. It's free. These are just life choices. The government wants to tell you that it's out of your control. That is that you're a victim, and that, you know what, there's nothing you can do about it, and cancer's inevitable, and all this kind of stuff is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And just don't. It's choices that you make, and that's what I would say.
Well, I love it. Those are definitely actionable. I mean, most cases, you know, inexpensive or free things that people can do, and I definitely agree. The sleep, which is, it sounds simple, but it's definitely not that easy for a lot of people. So, yeah. Do you have suggestions? Because I know so many people do suffer with insomnia, or not just insomnia, but they have a hard time staying asleep. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, in terms of sleep, I mean, like, I suffered with difficulty sleeping for a long time, so I know all about it. But basically, it's a routine, and it starts with the beginning of the day. Get up mm-hmm. in the morning. Don't snooze the alarm. Don't lie in there. Draw the curtain back. Get outside in your backyard. You know, get in the sun. Get in the light. Do some grounding. Set your circadian rhythm, right? The light goes into your eyes, into the pineal gland, and sets the master clock. That's what you want. Mm-hmm. And trust me, if you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning at the crack of dawn, 3 days in a trot, by the fourth mm-hmm. night, you'll be crawling into bed at 8, 9, 10 o'clock. Okay. You'll be dying to go to sleep. Now, the best hours for sleep in terms of healing capacity are between 9 and 1 in the morning. So you know what? Get that good stuff. So even if you wake up around about 1 o'clock and go for a wee, hands up, that's me. You know, I'm of that age now. It's all right. It's all good. And then you go back to bed and you go to sleep. Okay. I mean, normally try and have the bedroom cool, maybe in the window slightly ajar. Having it too hot is not good. Don't have a massive meal before bed. You know, if you eat 3 hours before your meal, you won't be able to go to sleep. Because if you think about it, eating is inflammatory. It's switching on the machinery. It's all churning and it's all going. You've just switched everything on inside you. I mean, just because you can't hear it, but trust me, it's going on. What you should be doing is the machinery is all turning off. Everything's turning off. So don't eat 3 hours before bed. So if remember, I told you it's ideal that you're asleep by 10. That means do not eat after 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Just think about how many people eat late at night in front mm-hmm. of the TV box and, you know, eating their pizza and all the other garbage. So don't eat late at night. And also avoid the flickering blue light, the TVs. You know, everybody comes home and they just sit in front of the TV. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. You know, switch off after 8 at 8:30 so that you've got an hour where everything's just, you know, just slightly coming down. And if you think about it, you know, if you're watching something that's stressful, a lot of action, excitement, fear, your adrenaline is going to be up. I mean, you need to be winding these stressors, the cortisol down and having a nice soak, a bath, having a herbal tea will help, chamomile or something like that. Meditation, prayer, sex just before bed is awesome. You know, that'll tire you out, get you ready for bed. I mean, all these things, you know, do. And if you're one of those people lying in bed, busy thinking, oh my God, I should have said this to Ahmed. I said Malik to him. Oh my God, that was so wrong. You know, basically stop thinking and start feeling. Translate those into feelings and emotions. Think about the time when you're walking on the beach and your feet were on the warm sand and the waves were crashing on the shore. Think about your husband stroking your hair. I know it happens only once a year, but, you know, just think about that. Think about when you're massaging your shoulders. You know, think about the love you have for your children. You know, all these kind of, start feeling. You know what? You'll just drift away to sleep. So the moment you recognize your thinking, say to yourself, stop. I know what I'm doing now. No, I don't want to think. I'm going to start feeling. And if you do all of these little wee things, these little biohacks, I'm telling you, you will start sleeping well. And then when you wake up, you'll wake up without the alarm clock. You'll wake up and it's 5:30, 6 o'clock and you're like, oh, I'm awake now. Get up, get outside, do a little bit of exercise, walk outside, have a cold bath. That's it. Boom. And repeat.
I love it. Well, we are running out of time. If you have anything else you want to add, please do. And tell everybody where they can find you. And thank you so much for being here with us today.
No, thank you for inviting me. So I would say it's Doc Malik, docmalik.com is my website. You can find me there and you've got my Twitter page handle there, Doc Ahmed Malik. If you can, subscribe to my Substack or my paid Spotify. I mean, only 1 in 3 of my podcasts are behind a paywall. I mean, I have to do this. I need to find some way of looking after my family. But there's a lot of good podcasts out there. I mean, if you want to support freedom and fight against tyranny and medical tyranny, I would appreciate your support. Only after you've supported Courtney, though. Like, don't pick me over her.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for everything you're doing. And thank you. Thank you all for watching and listening. We'll be right back.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.